And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, D-Day, June 6th, 1944. Today is June 6th. In 1944, the Allies launched the campaign against fascism, and ultimately, fascism fell. German fascism fell in 1945. Japanese fascism fell in 1946. What's American fascism? Here we are, so many years later, 75 years later. It looks like we're facing a fascist threat in America that's domestic.
Yes.
That's the horror of this particular D-Day. Wherever you look, Arizona, Georgia, Texas, something's going on. How is this going to be stopped? Meanwhile, let's make sure we know what we're talking about. Don't you think I'm right?
Yeah, it's becoming more apparent every day. And I go back to what I've been saying for years, that around the time of Newt Gingrich, the Republican Party acquired this idea that only they should be allowed to run the country. And it sort of bootstrapped on the libertarian ideas that the minority could rule because their ideas would not be accepted by the majority, but if they could jigger things and work on things in all sorts of different ways, they could ensure that they still would get elected. And if they didn't get elected, that they would stymie anything that the Democrats were able to do.
This is the Koch brothers' long-time theory and long-time practice. Prevent people from voting because people will vote in their own interest, which is not in the interest of the Koch brothers.
Right. Right, environmentally or taxation-wise or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
But this thing has really metastasized into something even worse under Donald Trump because, Gingrich couldn't really lead the revolution, and he, in fact, was overthrown. What happened, though, with Donald Trump is you had this charismatic figure who people decided that they would follow even in defeat and throw off what they know to be true or what they see and what they've heard and just go along with this cultism of Trump. And even where even if it didn't work, they say, well, we will change the rules so that what doesn't work is what's working. It's the 1984, everything is upside down. And you mentioned it's the states that are trying to change the voter laws. And this is nothing new. They've been doing this for a long time in the Republican Party, but it's gotten even worse because they've had rules that actually, like in Florida, about absentee voting that Donald Trump used in the last election, the Republicans thought was working to their advantage. And now they're even, fooling around with those laws, making it even harder to vote. And no one really asked them why it should be harder to vote or why people shouldn't vote in a democracy. That basic question is put asunder. They've gotten around it by saying, well, you need an election integrity, which is really the code word for suppression of minority voting.
In addition to that, of course, the Trump people, the Trump fascists, are moving vigorously to put themselves in a position to administer the vote. So not only will they restrict who can vote, they'll decide on who counts the vote. They'll do the counting.
Right.
Didn't Stalin break through that?
Didn't Stalin say something like that, to who counts I may be wrong on that, but that's what's important. It's
I
not
think
who
Stalin
votes.
said it, but I think Mayor Daley said it.
Maybe it was Mayor Daley. Talk about a talk about an American, you know, running, you know, running things against sometimes the will of the majority, you know. But
well, and this
anyway.
The government here is run by a minority, and it represents a minority, and that's what they call democracy. Yeah. And anything else, they say that's rigging it.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, look what Mitch McConnell did. He stopped things from going through in the Obama years, and he's doing it again in the Biden years.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons that they want to get around the filibuster. Except you've got a couple of Democrats who are unwilling to do what is necessary to get around it. They won't even do a carve-out on electioneering. And if they don't do that, the chances of Democrats winning in 2022 and controlling the House of Representatives becomes much slimmer.
By the way, this business with the filibuster, the way they talk about it, you think the filibuster was a sacrosanct institution. The idea of the filibuster was specifically condemned by James Madison when he wrote the Constitution.
Right. The protection for the minority or the smaller states was that every state got two senators. So the filibuster adds what I guess you'd say is a double protection of the minority, but it's turned into this double protection has been into, you know, turned into minority rule.
That's right. The filibuster was invented really by Calhoun, John Calhoun. And he invented it to prevent anybody attacking slavery.
Right. Any laws being passed for, that didn't maintain the black people as, you know.
Yeah. But there was a tradition in the first 100 years of the Republic that once the senators started repeating themselves, once they no longer were having fruitful discussion, you cut off the discussion and you move to a vote. That tradition is what the modern filibuster has attacked. And now you can never cut off debate. It has nothing to do with protecting the rights of the minority to state their point of view. Some of these filibusters that they've been running, for example, filibusters against people who were appointed to office, in the end, the people who are conducting the filibuster didn't vote against the people. So what was the filibuster for, except to delay, delay, delay? And now the filibuster doesn't delay, delay, delay. If one senator says, I'm going to filibuster, he doesn't have to do it. He just has to say, I'm going to do it. They strike it from the agenda and move on. They're not even voting on the issue. They're voting on whether they should talk about the issue or whether they should stop talking about the issue. That's what's at issue here.
Yeah. And don't forget, the original filibuster required people to actually do the filibustering. As you said, now it's just saying, I will do that, and nobody puts them to the task.
Right. The last time they did that was when Richard Russell mobilized the Southern senators against the 1957 Civil Rights Act. They had teams of four senators in relay holding the floor. But at a certain point, Russell got what he wanted in terms of rewriting the law, so he called off the filibuster. He won.
Yeah. He won. The other thing, you know, and it used to be a two-thirds vote. It used to be that you needed 67. It got lowered to 60, but it's 60 votes is a hard number. It's not the 60%, or it's not 60% of those.
No, it's 60% of everybody elected, not 60% of those who were there.
Present and voting.
Right. It used to be, as you say, 67% or whatever, but it was of those present and voting. So they reduced it to 60% of the whole body. That was an innovation by Richard Russell of Georgia, the leader of the Dixiecrats. He seemed to be giving something up. But in fact, he got a lot. He actually got himself a rule that you can almost never overcome. I think it never has been overcome.
It's hard to. I mean, The last time there were 60 votes in either party was right after Obama was elected, for those few months before Ted Kennedy died.
Yeah.
And then they lost the election there in Massachusetts.
That's right. The Attorney General was a bomb. Really was a terrible candidate.
Yeah, she was a bad candidate. And they had a good-looking guy, you know.
Guy drove around in his truck.
Yep, pickup truck.
Yeah.
But anyway, getting back to this, this is a real, it's gotten to be a real challenge for democracy. They won't accept defeat. They're going, in Arizona, they're going through this phony audit, they call it a fraudit, that even the Republicans in Arizona are opposed to.
And the same, they're destroying the ballots themselves. You can, there's no reason to ever trust any audit in Arizona because they've already monkeyed with the ballots.
Right. Matter of fact, Arizona said we have to get new voting machines because we've lost confidence in the way that these voting machines can be relied on. And again, they've done it in Georgia again, and they want to bring that to Pennsylvania. And we're going to see, because they know they can't get a law passed to do it because the governor will veto it. So they're probably going to do this through the state Senate, saying we're going to conduct some sort of a committee hearing or whatever. And that's going to go to court. The Attorney General, Josh Shapiro, who wants to be the next governor, is going to file suit to block it. And fortunately, the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania is heavily Democratic. So their likelihood of success if that goes to court is probably pretty low. But the fact is that they don't care. They want to win, but they don't care as much as getting the publicity and getting the propaganda out there.
What benefit is it to them to undermine the average person's belief in the electoral system? Doesn't that redound to the benefit of those who say, hey, what's the point of standing for elections? Let's not take part in the electoral system. Let's take part in riot. Let's
they don't
take
care.
Part in violent overthrow.
Yeah, they don't care. They really only want to be in power to control what happens, to prevent things from happening, and to prevent things from getting better. Because they're afraid that it's going to cost money, and their sponsors, like the Koch brothers, are going to have to pay more in taxes.
Meanwhile, your favorite general, General Flynn, he told a rally in Texas the other day, he thought the military should stage a coup, like the military in Myanmar staged a coup. After Aung San Suu Kyi's party won 80% of the vote, the military overthrew the elected officials, locked them all up. There have been several thousand people killed now by the military. That's what General Flynn says we should be doing here.
Yeah, I mean, this was the man that was the National Security Advisor.
Right.
Who's taken an oath to the Constitution.
Right. Who didn't change his point of view then, and it's not like he's a different guy. He was that guy then.
Yeah. Well, remember, he's the guy at the convention that said, lock her up.
Yeah.
When she wasn't even charged with a crime. You know, what kind of an education did he get at West Point or whatever? But it doesn't matter because...
Hey, listen, what's his name? Your former great Secretary of State.
Mike Pompeo.
He graduated number one from West Point.
Yeah. And he got a whole host of the Republicans, Josh Hawley, Tom Cotton, all of these guys that went to Ivy League schools.
Yeah.
And they what they took away from their education is...
they make a good argument for no education is better than some education.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they got Manchin and Sinema, who oppose ending the filibuster, who continue to believe they're going to make a deal with the Republicans. They can't believe that.
Well, that's their excuse, at least.
But I understand but how? I mean, are they really such simple-minded fools, the two of them?
It's, you know, if you have an ideological belief, it's sometimes very hard to give in to the reality that the ideological belief is wrong.
And well, that's the function of ideology. It's to stand in the way and obscure reality, right? It's a false reality. I got it. I understand it. So is that what you're saying? These people, Sinema and Manchin, gripped by an ideology of bipartisanship, and they can't see that when McConnell says forget bipartisanship, he actually means it?
Yeah, in essence. Yeah. That's what it is, and we're going to have to see what see how that goes. You know, I just talked about that the Koch brothers don't want to pay for anything. We had, you know, Biden was he's been negotiating on the infrastructure, ironically, with the other senator from West Virginia, Shelley Moore Capito, and he started out at $2.2 trillion, went to $1.7. The Republicans came in at, what, 500-some billion?
Yeah, 560 billion.
And then she came back and says, oh, we'll move towards you. And she threw in another 50 billion.
None of this is new money. Her money is all reallocating COVID funds that weren't spent.
Right. Because they don't want to, again, have any corporate payment of this.
Exactly.
But Biden kind of shocked us this week. Because remember, he ran on the fact that he wanted to raise the corporate rate from 21% to 28%.
Right.
What we have to understand is a generation ago, corporate taxes paid for about a third of the income. And now it's down to like 7%. So who's making up that difference?
You are. I am.
Yeah. But Biden campaign said, I'm going to raise it from 21 to 28. And Manchin came in quickly and said, I won't go for anything over 25. And Biden gets in with Capito and he says, you know, I'm prepared to lower the corporate rate, not raise it to 15%. But then it turns out there was a string attached to that. And that is his Secretary of State, I believe, Blinken, went over to Europe. Maybe it was the Secretary of the Treasury, went over to Europe and said, you know, we've got to all get together and stop this race to the bottom on cutting taxes and cutting our government's ability to function. And so there's been a tentative type of agreement saying that corporate taxes everywhere will be 15%, because in some places it was less than that or almost zero, where companies would assign, through an accounting trick, income to a sham entity in another country that only had a mailbox, and say we're going to assign our intellectual property to that entity, and then assign all of these profits to that entity under that. And looks like some of that could be coming to the end. We'll have to see. You know, the devil's always in the details.
But what does that mean? That means that he reduces the corporate tax rate in the United States.
Well, what he's hoping to do, and what I think he wants to do, is close all the loopholes where companies like Amazon don't pay anything, so that you have a net gain. And don't forget, he's also out there trying to bolster the IRS to cut to increase the amount of money that the IRS gets by auditing the millionaires and billionaires much more intensely than it's been done. The IRS has been starved by the Republicans mainly, and has concentrated its collection efforts on the little guy and not on the big guy, because it's so...
Well, the little guys can't fight.
That's right. That's right. And these things, the Biden people should be publicizing their efforts.
Well, now, if this worked, presumably the West Virginia senator, the leader of the Republican negotiating team, would welcome it and say, okay, here's how we're going to go along with you. Did she?
Not that I know of.
So what's the point of the session?
The question is how long is Biden going to continue these negotiations? And this week, another...
Well, how can he not negotiate? What can he do?
Well, he could say, look, I negotiated. I came down a lot. And they're not negotiating in any realistic term. So he'll say, I tried, and they're not going along with this. I'm not getting reciprocity, so we're going to go it alone. But at least I tried. He has some cover.
He has cover only if Manchin agrees.
Yeah. But there's another wrench that got thrown into things this week, and that was the fact that on a number of issues, on a number of economic and tax issues, the Democrats thought they could go through reconciliation, and the parliamentarian of the Senate said, not so fast. You've already done it once. I'm only going to allow you to do it one more time.
Why? On what basis?
That's a good question. I think the basis is that we can't have everything go through. We have to have some regular order in the Senate, but there is no regular order with Mitch McConnell there.
Where is the constitutional principle that says you have to have regular order?
That's just the rules of the Senate.
Where's the rule of the Senate that says you have to have regular order?
Well, that's the thing. The Constitution says each house of Congress shall adhere to its own rules.
Exactly. So why can't you have reconciliation whenever you want to have it?
Well, that's because Joe Manchin won't give you the 50th vote.
Well, that's
in order to do that.
Yeah, you know, that's not for the parliamentarian to say that means you can't have it.
No, but you'll have to see how Schumer navigates this.
Meanwhile, for most working people, this D-Day is dreadful. D-Day could be marked dreadful day. This week, we see in over 20 states movement by the Republicans to stop the supplemental $300 a week payment, federal payment, to the unemployed. This isn't costing these governors a nickel. It's all federal money.
Right.
But they don't want the working people in these 20 states to get it. Why? Because they want to starve them back to work. And they say it. They don't deny it.
Yeah. And they're not raising the minimum wages in these states either.
No. And you're dealing with workers at the lowest level of the pay scale. That's who's not getting back to work right at this moment.
Right.
In other words, workers who are making about $550 a week if they work a full week. But many of them don't get to work a full week.
Right, because they don't want to have to, because the employer doesn't want to have to be responsible for other benefits.
Exactly. So you're talking about people who are being forced to take jobs that is a significant pay cut from the unemployment benefit. You know, if you're an investor, or let's put it a different way, if you run an investment fund and you put your money someplace that demonstrates that it will pay less than another place that you could put it that will pay more, you can be indicted for fraud. You can be indicted for violating the interests of the people whose money you're investing. It's a crime. Why should a worker be forced to take a job that doesn't pay what his value is? Why is he worse off than the investor? But the law, the politicians, the Republicans say, the worker could be enslaved, but the investor, he better get top dollar. If the investor would be governed by the same rules as the worker, or if the worker would be governed by the same rules as the investor, there'd be no question that the worker is justified in not working for $550 when he should be working for $750 or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the number of new jobs came out over a half a million, but again, disappointed. I don't know who makes up these estimates as to how many jobs should be created a month.
What it means is productivity is up because profits are up.
Right.
So from the viewpoint of the economy as a whole, the economy is doing great. It's just the workers that are not doing great.
Yeah, it's very uneven. It's not.
That's right. But it puts the lie to the Republicans who say you can't be spending all this money on infrastructure because we're going to have runaway inflation. You can't have runaway inflation if you have rising productivity, and the productivity is so much higher than the average wage. It's just not possible to have runaway inflation. But inflation occurs the other way around.
Yeah, but meanwhile, we've had increasing costs of things. Gasoline is up. Of course, a lot of that had to do with the pipeline hack.
Yep.
And now meat is up, but we had another hack there. And yeah, that's another thing that the administration has to deal with. Other things, prices are rising. Lumber went through the roof for a number of months because of people fixing up houses and building and things like that. That seems to have abated a little bit. But food is up. Cost of food in stores. I noticed I buy a certain kind of cereal, and that went up pretty high. Broke $4 a box. I'd never paid more than $3.69 before, and used to be able to get it for $2 for $5 sometimes, or $2 for $6. We're seeing that, but we're also seeing increased spending by people, which is what the stimulus is.
People are going back to work. Some people are going back to work.
Yeah.
So therefore, there's increased spending. Well, people are going out to restaurants. People who hadn't been.
Well, we finally started going to a restaurant, but we're eating outside.
Right.
It's the first time, the first two times in 15 months that we've gone to a restaurant.
Right.
That we've actually eaten there, not taken out. Not taken out.
What do you see coming up next week?
I'm not sure. I think we have to see what. Trump is on the stump again.
Trump is on the stump.
And we'll have to see what
Trump
kind of reaction.
He's going to get reinstated. He said that. He announced that he's going to get reinstated in August.
In August, along with Senators McSally and Perdue.
Right.
The MyPillow guy told him that, and Sidney Powell told him that. Funny in the last
MyPillow guy's lawyer got canned by the law firm because he acted in a way that would put the law firm at risk in his defense of the MyPillow guy.
Yeah. It's funny, in law school, they don't teach you about being reinstalled in the Constitution.
They probably didn't see it. It's written in invisible ink.
Yeah. in Republican invisible ink.
Right, exactly.
Or fascist invisible
ink. All right, D-Day. D-Day for... let's hope we can have a D-Day for domestic fascism that we can celebrate soon.
D-Day for democracy.
D-Day for democracy, right.
Yeah.
See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.